Happy Friday. It's Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin and Ailish. We made it through the week. We got playoff matchup set for the Eastern Conference. Some scary moments in hockey last night, if you're a women's hockey fan. And a couple goodbyes emotionally in the NHL. There was a lot going on last night.
Yeah, lots going on in the city, too. We got the hottest team in baseball probably in the city right now. They probably took an overnight flight and got in here,
They're
right?
Waking up at the Ritz this morning.
Yeah, they're feeling good about themselves, those Tampa Bay Rays.
Yikes. Big weekend ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on. No shortage of storylines in the sporting world on a Friday.
Yeah, just they jam-packed it for us. We got Blue Jays to recap. Maple Leafs ended their regular season last night against the New York Rangers.
Before we do anything, though, can I ask you about that Canada-Sweden
game?
Yeah,
it needs to be spoken about.
Last night was a bit of a blur, admittedly. Lots of stuff going on. Big NHL night. I was sweating like a million futures in the NHL.
So my head's spinning a million
a little
futures?
Bit. Well, it was a big night. Any, you know, division? Any... I had the last place team being Chicago, and they unfortunately got a point and a loss and killed that and our Waken rake. Like, not fun, Chicago. But yeah, there's a lot of things going on in the NHL world. Did not see all of Canada-Sweden, saw a little bit, did not see the conclusion. How was it that Canada, winners of everything, got pushed to the limit, forced into overtime by the Swedes? Is just, you know, women's hockey finding this common ground, this balance, this
Buddy,
parity that we've been searching for a while?
Scared.
Or was this just a nightmare scenario for Canada?
Canada outshot them and outplayed Sweden. Like, that's just simply the way it's going to be. But it got dodgy down the stretch. So Canada was up 2-1 for, I don't know, about the last couple minutes in terms of holding onto this lead. It looked pretty secure. Sweden was pushing. My girl, Laura Stacey, iced the puck looking for an empty net.
You didn't have to call her out on that.
Hey, that's what teammates and besties do. Iced the puck looking for the empty net. And anyway, Sweden
full
tied.
Mitch Marner last night.
Yeah, she was. Sweden ties it up with 8 seconds left in the game to go 2-2. And that would have been, so anyway, Canada ends up winning in overtime thanks to Sarah Nurse. That would have been the, I was trying to figure this out, maybe the biggest upset in women's hockey history.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, at least
it
in terms of top of mind stuff.
On home ice, defending champs against Sweden, who was relegated and comes back up. Like, they've been up and down. They've had a pretty big fall from grace because it used to be Canada, Sweden, Finland, and the United States. And those, not in that
like
order,
big,
sorry.
Big divide, but like, yes, they were the most
they
competitive.
They were the four teams. Yeah,
yeah, they were ahead of like the Russians
for
or,
sure.
or whomever.
And so Canada ends up winning in OT, but it was really shaky. I don't know. Yesterday was a weird day because USA only won 3-0. The Czech Republic upset the Finns, which was a pretty, I mean, it wasn't this level of upset, but that was a big enough upset. So it was a bit scary coming down the stretch here.
It seems like the separation is not what it used to be. And I don't know if that's just like a one-off thing, if that's just...
Unfortunately, I think it's a one-off thing.
If that's just Brampton. I don't know what it is, but it seems like Canada and the United States can't separate themselves like they have.
I don't know if I agree with that as much.
Well, they're not blowing teams out.
That's certainly it.
Like, that's just all.
Canada,
that's all I mean.
The last time Canada played Sweden at the Olympics, it was 11-0.
Exactly. We're not getting these crazy scores.
But I'm not quick to say that that's just the state of women's hockey got so much better.
No,
in a year.
It's just for whatever reason, it's not blowout central, like it always normally is.
Yeah, and they are certainly out shooting and out playing these teams. But it's great to have more competitive. Like, I would rather. Would I rather see an 11-0 victory or a 3-2 overtime victory? Probably 11-0 because the opportunity to be eliminated from the world championship by Sweden was there on the line in a do or die next goal win scenario. There is a small part of me that sees this as, okay, there's some positive growth there. I don't think that Sweden made that big of a jump in this off season since last Worlds in August that they're up there, but anything can happen. And that's actually what is interesting about these tournaments, especially when you see teams like Japan, the Czech Republic, Sweden, Finland having opportunities at the world stage, which we don't get to see much in North America. You see some growth, but I think Canada just, I don't know, maybe they think they're coasting in a bit. That's the worry that I have. USA as well with a 3-0 victory yesterday. Like they should be, the spreads on these games have been 6-8.
Yeah, and it's been
and it hasn't,
covering all been, these middle, yeah, middle ground teams covering. Have been covering with regularity.
And I guess like for me, exclusively. If you're Team Canada, you've got the gold medal game circled on your calendar, you versus United States for the last 6 months.
But that's always the situation.
And it most likely will be the situation, even though that was
no, but in terms of like mindset going into a quarterfinal game, mm-hmm. you're always understanding that you're getting to the United States.
100%. But I do think that maybe there's like a level of respect to your opponents that you're missing if you just think that, hey, we beat Sweden 11-0 and like whatever, it's Sweden. So it's just like nothing's easy. It should be easy, but there's teams that come up like this. I think Canada outshot Sweden 48-14 in regulation and went to OT. If you run into one hot goaltender, you start getting a little nervous, anxious. You're trying to do too much. You're trying to ice the puck into the empty net. You're trying to do things that are maybe outside of the realm of how you play when you play Team USA. Like if you watch how Canada played Team USA on Monday and you look at how they played Sweden last night or yesterday afternoon, you're playing differently because you're playing differently against your opponent, and maybe there's just a level of respect. Sounds like they're coming into this thinking that they're going to walk all over them, but they kind of are.
Would have been tough for old Troy Ryan to have Anne-Marie Debien on the bench in a loss.
And see, that's the other thing, too. Like
is he getting the walking papers if you lose with someone other than Debien?
You're not. But that's the other thing about this is still a development tournament for some players. Mashmeyer has been the
World
backup.
Championship development tournament?
When else are they developing? They're not playing in a pro league.
I suppose. I mean, there's the rivalry series that they have. And that's
against the United States.
Yeah, but you're
pretty much playing the same game plan every night.
That's true. I guess there's not much variety.
Well, no, I'm not giving him benefit.
I'm just saying, like, if you want to get up to speed,
you're
going
to have to put Emery Smashmeyer in a game, is what I'm saying. Like, it's, you know, yeah, she's going to have to play something.
She's had the opportunity to, though.
Yeah.
And again, like, she gave up 2 goals, whatever. But, like, a knockout phase, usually run with your best goaltender, though.
I'm not surprised that she got an opportunity to play. But it would have looked bad. Anyway, Canada ends up winning. Sarah Nurse, the hero in OT, not Poulin. So, washed.
I didn't say it. You went there. I wouldn't even joke about that.
It's a joke.
I guess because you're friends, you can make that joke.
Anyway, Canada wins. Thank God. They're headed towards the semis tomorrow, and then the gold medal game would be Sunday. So
your weekend would have been wide open all of a sudden if that went the other way.
I might go on a little vacay. A little road trip to Prince Edward County or something. I'll be hopefully at both games. So that was the women's hockey update. We've got playoff matchups for the Eastern Conference, and there's some great ones. Boston, Florida, mm-hmm. Toronto, Tampa, which shocker. We knew that one.
So Florida enters the Leaf bracket.
Mm-hmm. Carolina and the Islanders, and New Jersey and the Rangers. Now, I cannot wait for that one. That's my favorite, for sure.
And we also have matchups in the Western Conference, at least in the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. Where it will be Edmonton and LA, of course, because unbelievable run for the Oilers. I think they've given up 1 point out of their last 30 on the table.
Like they're red hot.
They still didn't get the division. That says a lot about what the Vegas Golden Knights have been able to do. But Vegas will get Winnipeg in the first round. So Winnipeg enters the Pacific Division side of things, and the Central Division still has to be decided with Colorado playing tonight. Win, and I think actually if they lose in overtime or a shootout, they will also claim the division and leapfrog Dallas. So two more series to be officially put in stone, but if you're looking at the Pacific,
there are only two games today.
And the Eastern Conference is set in stone.
Sabres, Blue Jackets, Avs, Preds tonight. That wraps up the regular season for the NHL. So you march forward to the playoffs and confirmed that the Maple Leafs will start their game one against the Tampa Bay Lightning on Tuesday of next week. So we'll have Monday and Tuesday to tee that up. And we're going to do our tarot card readings, which were a hit when I believe we did it the last time, was the trade deadline for the Raptors.
Yes, we've only tried the spirits have only been used...
Twice.
Twice?
Once.
I think we've only done it once.
Wow, we only pulled it out once. Nonetheless, I want to go back and listen to that because now we have the full outcome of the season. And I think I remember being kind of spooky and like dark. And then look how the season ended. I think I remember pulling the tarot card and it said, you will shoot 50% at the free throw line. And it said, DR DeRozan.
That was what was in
the game. DR DeRozan.
Yeah, we'll do that Monday. We'll have full, you know, we'll have serious previews as well.
Yes,
we'll be very, very serious on Monday and Tuesday. But also, I believe in the A-list is when we have that earmarked for.
Yes,
we'll do the Monday. Tarot cards. Three pressing questions to ask the higher powers that be.
Okay, one other thing that I watched last night or in the wee evening hours was for the Wake and Rake, as well as the Jonathan Toews final game as a Chicago Blackhawk. I had eyes on that, which was devastating to watch the Blackhawks and the Flyers. It was like watching paint dry.
Really? It was kind of wide open, the very few things that I saw. But, I mean, my men's league game on Wednesday was wide open as well.
Yeah.
So it's wide open.
I just mean in terms of two teams that I really didn't... move the needle for me. Even though Leafs Rangers, I'll say, was also a pretty boring game. Like, they weren't.
It was definitely the worst thing I watched last night was Leafs and Rangers.
Anyway, listen to this. This could have been the story of that we'd be talking about for a long time. So Blackhawks are down. You're hearing this is the final moments of Jonathan Toews' career. They're trying to wait for a commercial break because they have this video tribute they want to play, which obviously they'd have to do it at a commercial break because it's a lengthy enough video tribute. But they are not getting a whistle down the final, you know, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. And you have to, obviously, you can't do it on an icing and you can't do it on, there's a couple of times you can't do a media TV timeout, right?
Right. If you're being penalized for whatever reason, like if you knock the net off, it's like...
You can't have, okay, now yeah,
because
TV
you're trying
break.
To punish the team for having, you know, you have them on when they shouldn't be on. Yeah,
so that's the broadcast is like, oh, stay tuned because we're trying to get this in and we're gonna show the Blackhawks feature. And it's like, they never got an opportunity.
They never got it in?
But they tied the game quite late to send it to overtime. So at that point, Jonathan Toews scored one goal in his final game. And I was like, here we go. All right. Like, I did say bet a hat trick, but I also bet two goals. So I was starting to feel good about that because that'd be nice. They get the opportunity to push to OT. Okay. So they get to have their video board tribute now after the game. So they've figured that out. Jonathan Toews has a half ice breakaway in overtime. Full half ice from the center of the ice breakaway. I'm like, this is it. He's going to go down. He's going to score the OT winner in his final game as a Blackhawk at home to beat the Flyers. And he does his little signature move, and it pops over the goalie's pad, and it rolls through the crease and outside the post. And then they go back, and they score. Provorov scores on actually a really nice goal. And then the camera pans to Jonathan Toews, who's just like, come on. Like, look, what the hell?
Wow.
I just thought, what a nice storybook ending that could have been for this kid. Guy, man, old man now.
See, this is the beauty of gambling, right? Like, I don't know how locked in you would be on Chicago, Philly to end the season.
Not even just for financial gain.
No,
I just thought, like, this guy's last dying.
Mostly financial gain.
Are you kidding? It's
you really locked in that much on Jonathan?
Well, I'm just thinking storylines.
Sentiment.
No, well, I don't really care too much. I mean, there's a lot of other things that went on in this guy's career that we don't need to get into. But just think, your captain, your legend, the best captain and franchise history is playing in his last game, which you've already publicized and everybody knows and everybody's there for the Jonathan Toews story. Mm-hmm. He's got a breakaway in OT. You're telling me that couldn't have been like better scripted.
It would have been nice. Yes.
Yeah.
It would have been very, very nice.
Anyway, I watched
What did you think of the decision to be like, this is Jonathan Toews' final game?
I actually respected it.
I don't think we've ever seen anything like that, but
eyes to watch that game last night because the Chicago Blackhawks yesterday when we got off the air, and I had teed this up in the Wake and Rake, which is why I had had my eyes on this game because we had heard that it might be his last game as a Blackhawk. It was his last game as a Blackhawk as they came out and said it around 10 a.m. Hey, we've decided, we had this conversation between both sides. This is it. Like, we're going to move on from that. I think it just gave the fan base an opportunity to say, we're going to enjoy this and not have speculation. Was that the last time? This is his night.
It was a come say goodbye. And I don't know why we haven't seen that more often because we get these decisions at the end of every single professional sports season. Some team is giving up on some player who means something to that organization or at least means something to the fan base. And we never really get anything like that.
Same thing happened last night. This was the other game I was watching. Sabres and Oilers. No, Sabres and... Senators Craig Anderson was put in net, and it was his last ever game.
But did he start the game?
Yeah, he got, and he wins the game.
I was just saying the way you said it, put in that. I was like, did they just like Alexander the last 2 minutes?
And they win in OT. And then after the game, and you can tell by the way they're celebrating that this has got to be his final game. Both teams celebrate with him because former goalie. It was actually really,
it was perfect.
It was actually like kind of beautiful. I don't use the word beautiful in sports, but
tear up a little bit.
It was really sentimental to see this guy. Everybody on the ice wanted to celebrate with him. And then afterwards he says, yes, that's it for me. So, you know, even that, you had speculation, you see him play. It's a really great storybook moment. You almost had two of them last night to see him get this OT winner. The whole team, they don't even celebrate with the goal scorer. They went down and celebrated with him. And it was really, really lovely to see. And both teams obviously cared a lot about him. And then you find out that it's last game. So I don't know. Maybe that's something we see moving forward. The teams announce, this is it for me. I'm going to go out on this game. And this is my opportunity.
They definitely could have done that with Craig Anderson. And maybe it would have been, like, I think everyone knew. And the teams were perfect. And it was the perfect storybook ending to his career. I mean, there's, like, layers of storybook and layers of importance. And Craig Anderson, the fact that he got to play the Senators in his final game and win, that's awesome. Like, that is perfect, perfect, perfect. And I guess if Tay's buried on that breakaway, it would have been perfect, perfect, perfect as well. But, like, yeah, that was very cool. I like that. I like that they gave the opportunity to just be like, we are fully transparent here. Yeah. He would probably like to, I didn't say that, but he would probably like to return if you're reading between the lines, but we need to move on and we want you to say goodbye properly. I thought that was a great move by the Blackhawks.
And both teams were in the privilege of knowing that that was their last game, where it's different. Like, let's say a couple weeks ago, Wayne Simmonds speculated to have played his last ever home game as a Maple Leaf, but the Maple Leafs have hopefully a lengthy run ahead.
Maybe. He's going to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, but everyone was saying it. It was weird, right? Like, all over that might be Wayne Simmonds' last time as a Maple Leaf on home ice. And I was like, well, he could still play.
Yeah.
I thought that was, we were like writing off his career as a...
And that's why Sheldon Keefe didn't want to answer that question.
Yeah, but I also
I didn't see the video of that, but I heard that he was a little snippy.
Well, he should have been, because this guy's still got, you never know, you might make it to the Stanley Cup final and you're telling me Wayne Simmonds isn't going to get one playoff game? I just thought that was weird that
sometimes we as media try
to write this guy's career wrap-up story too quick, right?
Well, you want to write the story.
Yeah, but like, let Wayne Simmonds announce that he's going to play his final game. Mm-hmm. Anyway, last night we saw the end for some careers or some, I guess, I don't know if it stays his career, but and his legacy.
The Leafs could have been like, yeah, this is going to be Wayne's final home game, and we expect him to be a big part of the playoffs, but this will be the last time. Like, that would have been okay.
But it would have been weird, because, like, what's he supposed to do for the next month or two? Like, just know that he's not playing?
This is going to be his last regular season game.
Regular
he's
season
retiring
game.
At the end of the season, so, and he's going to play in this game, and we want, like, that could be something, but again,
I don't know if he would.
I guess you only get that scenario when you're in a position where
you're done.
You're not going to the playoffs, and this is the only thing that matters from the game.
But anyway, it's different. We got to see some, we'll see some people come out, I'm sure, in the next little while and say that that's it for them, so get their flowers, get their moment. What else? Why don't you Leafs? Because we'll move on from them.
Yeah, let's go to Leafs.
Okay. Not one that you want to rewatch. How about that?
The fakest of fake games?
No, okay. I will say there was a few things that I cared about in that hockey game. And
I could probably pinpoint two
out of three hit.
Yeah.
William Nylander scored his 40th goal.
Which was awesome. Congratulations to William Nylander.
Yes, great to see. Huge for him. That's a big, nice round number. I believe that's the first time in his career. And Willie has been a great supporting cast member. We gave him, when we had our Oscars show, best supporting actor of the team. The last month, he has not been the best supporting actor of the team. Maybe getting into a little hibernation mode, waiting to gear up for the playoffs. Great to see him with a lot of pep last night trying to get that goal.
Yeah, 40 was a lock about a month ago, and it got a little greasy if you were looking for 40 goals. But he was absolutely all over it last night.
Like,
against a sleepy team with carrots of 40 goals dangling in front of his face, pretty electric player. And he was electric for most of the season. But the last month, hasn't been great. But William Nylander was pretty entertaining last night.
But watching Mitch Marner's 100-point, float away and just be, like, he had the worst luck, but the clock was ticking down and everybody knew that Mitch Marner was at 99 points. Everybody on both teams clearly knew that Mitch Marner was at 99 points. There's 3 minutes left of the game where basically there's an empty net for the Rangers, and Marner, I think, tries at four times.
There's four attempts.
Four attempts to get the puck into the empty net, and it is blocked four times in the neutral zone. I think, three times by Adam Fox, one by Keandre Miller.
Keandre got one, at least. Yeah.
And he just, like, has to throw his arms up, he as a Mitch Marner, on the bench watching it all dwindle away. And I actually felt bad watching this. I felt bad for Mitch Marner. And, yeah, the guy's got 99 points. But 100 points is a very significant milestone. You want to look back and say, Marner's 100-point season. 100-point season. Yeah, 99's still kind of 100. But it's not.
It's
and
not.
It meant a lot to him. He will probably get another opportunity, hopefully, to get 100 points. But everybody on that ice wanted him to on the Maple Leafs, and everyone on the Rangers was like, we're not letting this guy get his 100th point mm-hmm. as the clock runs down. So it was tough. I fell for him.
Especially in an empty net scenario where the game means nothing, it is a completely and wholly useless point. But it is a big framing night. It is a framing night for when you look back on a player, when you discuss where he ranks in the league's top tier. Like, you have this discussion, like, you're in a bar. Mitch Marner's the best winger in the NHL. And someone will come back, he's never even hit 100 points.
Yeah, that's going to be a conversation for sure.
And this will all be like,
greasy uncle at Shoeless Joe's is going to bring that
exactly.
up.
Exactly. But it'll all get like, the number and the context will get eroded over time. The number will not get eroded over time. The context will get eroded over time because he's got sat, load managed. Mm-hmm. He may have had an assist taken away from him when Austin Matthews scored that goal the other night, which he's very,
it's funny,
very aware
people
of.
Are going back and like rewatching videos like, actually, he touched the blade of his yeah. stick. It's
we
like,
are going to retroactively give him an assist on that play that happened 7 nights ago. Yeah, I mean, that is going to be a thing. He's never hit 100 points. How can you call him the best winger in the NHL? But
right.
with Nylander, it's next contract. Well, it begins with a 9.
Points.
He scored 40 goals.
40 points.
It's a 40-goal scorer. How could you not give him $9.5 million? Just, it's on the knife edge, right? This just the one goal here, one assist there, one block shot here, one non-assist there. It helps you frame your discussion. And when you are debating sports, you are pulling any self-serving stat you can possibly find. So Mitch Marner, a better winger than Mikko Rantanen, who scored 55 goals this year and carried Colorado through a Stanley Cup hangover season? Like, that's, you'll always have that now. And if Mitch Marner had just hit an empty net or dumped it into open ice for Michael Bunting to jump on it and deposit it into the empty net, you wouldn't be able to say that. So it was a big framing night, and ultimately it doesn't matter. If it was 39 goals for William Nylander, mm-hmm. brilliant, brilliant, brilliant season. Like, really, really awesome for.
But that's why I cared more about it, because he deserved 100 points more than anyone out on the ice. Like, he deserved that milestone because he was the MVP of the regular season.
And it's almost impossible to believe that he didn't get it. Everyone's getting 100 points. Not everyone, but a lot of people are getting 100 points, right? Like, this is the highest scoring mm-hmm. NHL we've seen, and Mitch Marner seemed to get a point every single time he played.
I think there's
other
like
than
four,
last night.
There's like four or five games all season long that he didn't get a point.
And he didn't get a hut. Like, it's honestly, that's at least, it's mind-blowing that he didn't get to that plateau. And we've been discussing, you know, how much it would mean to him. And it clearly meant a lot to him. Does it have any, like, negative consequences? No.
It might even have more positive. He's going to be shot out of the can in game one in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
You would hope so. You would hope that he thought, that he will think, that the 100 point, that's not going to be 100 points. But the next point, coming into playoffs, will mean more than one into an empty net. You would hope that's how it's framed. You would hope that's what he would genuinely, in his heart of hearts, believe. But I think he really wanted it, and I think it sucks a lot that he did not get it for him and for, you know, fans that were cheering along the way. It also sucked that that goal was not...
So that's it, too. It goes... There's a goal in the final dying seconds of the game, and it's challenged. I'm like, don't challenge a goal, because you want to go to OT and let Marner have a chance.
Get Marner some open ice.
And I thought, perfect. They let the Rangers tie it up. Give Marner an opportunity to get this point in OT. And he's probably sitting on the bench like, this better be called the goal. Why are we reviewing this? And then, you know, Rangers don't get the goal. Maple Leafs win. And Marner gets 99 points.
And
11 players have over 100 points this year.
And he's at a top 10 NHL season.
You know who else has 99 points?
Who else?
Poor Jack Hughes.
Did he get stuck on that?
99.
They scored a bunch of goals last night,
99.
Too. Maybe he got a few to get to 99. Yeah, it's a fake game. The fakest of games when you want the Rangers to tie it up late. You want to potentially squander a point so you can see Mitch Marner potentially get an assist or a goal in overtime because you want him to hit a milestone.
Other than that, Noel Achary also got 100 points. in his career. Hey, that's great. Honestly,
at least someone hit the century mark.
Yeah, somebody hit the century mark last night, and it was Noel Achari. 100 career points. That's awesome. Good for him. He's played. He joined a new team. He's played pretty good.
A little bit is like a little bit of this is characteristic to Marner, isn't it? Like a little bit, like you feel bad for him.
It's
sometimes.
A little brother sometimes.
Little brother stuff. Like, oh, Matthews had all this. He's had it all. And you should have had it all, but he didn't get it.
The Jack Hughes 99 point, I just double checked it, was on Luke Hughes' first NHL goal last night, OT winner. So.
I mean, I was dialed into the NHL last night, and I missed the Craig Anderson and Luke Hughes storyline.
So that's a wonderful storyline. The Craig Anderson storyline's great. It's too bad Mitch Marner didn't get 100 points, but other than that, it's all looking forward now. Everything, it's a whole new story, a whole new script. Everyone starts with 0 points, zero goals, zero, 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 zeros across the board because the playoffs is all that matters now. Tuesday, the Maple Leafs will start their series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll take your calls next week to hear how Leafs Nation is feeling moving into the playoffs. We'll save all that for Monday and Tuesday. But other than that, last night, I'm glad nobody got hurt.
Yeah, that's really the only thing.
There's one more stat I wanted to bring up.
Matthew Nye's had a couple moments, too.
I don't know. Yeah, he did, but I don't know
stance on it because you need to know the manual to play in the playoffs. The manual being like just, hey, what do we do with breakouts? Like, very important stuff.
Hey, you could study up this weekend.
But I'm still...
He's a college kid.
Yeah, he's a college kid. But yeah, I'm still like, you're encouraged. You're encouraged by what you see because there's a lot of talent there, and I can't wait to see it actually, you know, with the Maple Leafs next year and be a full-time regular thing.
One final thing that I want to talk about from the Leafs-Rangers game, which surprised me, and they said this on the broadcast, and they were kind of jinxing it, which is hilarious. The Leafs scored a goal in every single game this season. They were not shut out. All season long, they now have one of the longest ever streaks of consecutive.
It's actually
pretty amazing. It is. Fifth time in franchise history that they scored. I know it's just like, hey, you score a goal every night, but you never were shut out all season long. That, to me, is astonishing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's a great stat
this morning.
I'm...
All about the stats.
That you didn't run into a hot goaltender once.
One puck in the net.
Yeah, someone who was unbeatable one night. It says a little lucky, but also says a lot about how consistent the Leafs were offensively.
And one more of those could have been Mitch Marner.
Or Mitch.
Okay, not quickly, but Blue Jays as well before we move on to unpacking some Raptors. Or do you want to start with Raptors media day?
I don't think we have much for the Blue Jays, so let's save it.
Okay, we can save the Blue Jays. Raptors Day of Reflection was yesterday as we teed it up. We had your calls yesterday. Thanks for everyone for calling in because that was awesome to be able to chat through our feelings and our ups and downs of Raptors fandom, maybe more downs than anything. So coming off the season-ending loss on Wednesday, they had their quick media turnaround. We heard from some players and Nick Nurse, selection of players that decided, or I don't know how they go through this, but anyway, we heard from some, and Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster did not speak. They should be having their own press conference with reporters in the next coming days, so that'll be next week sometime, and we'll obviously bring you all that. There was a lot of audio from this. There's a lot to glean.
Like, Fred was up there for over a half hour.
Nick Nurse was up there. OG was up there. Pascal was up there. And
Yak was up there.
Yeah.
Scotty was up there.
So you could...
Chris Boucher
you
as
could,
well.
I mean, the Raptors show will have... a full breakdown they did yesterday, and they'll have another one today. We can't go through every single thing that was said, but we did go through and pick some tidbits that were important to us. You want to talk about Fred, and so do I. So do you want to start with Fred?
Yeah, I mean, I, to be honest, I didn't take, like, a whole lot from yesterday. It was kind of an extension of the, like, it was the post-game press conference. Yeah, it was too close to last night.
I was surprised that it's so quick. But they probably want to let the players get the hell home.
Of course. And the Masai Ujiri thing is the big thing. Like, that's when we're going to actually learn something, you would think.
Yes.
Even if he doesn't say anything, we learn something. Like, that is the most important conversation that needs to be had is Masai Ujiri. And we'll get that, and we'll talk about it then. Mm-hmm. But Fred, the maturity that he shows is, like, it's constant, it's omnipresent. You're always getting that. And I guess maybe you could quibble with that a little bit. Like, it seemed like he was kind of... waffling a little bit. Maybe there was like a little bit of a mini protest, or he was a little unhappy or whatever. There was a bit of that noise this year. But the fact that he's got leverage right now, I think is a good thing for the Toronto Raptors, because he's not going to do something in the same vein that Nick Nurse did the other night. He's not going to be selfish. He'll be selfish in the sense that, okay, I want to make this amount of money, and that's fair. But he's not going to just, like, take the money from the Raptors and be a bad teammate.
He's not petty.
He's not petty.
Nick Nurse can be very petty.
Nick Nurse can be very petty. So if they come to Fred and say, Fred, like, we just can't do this. We're going to try to rebuild. It's going to be okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Fred is going to be an adult about whatever happens. And if that means you're, like, player coach, if that means you're shepherding in a new era, if that means you are going to be earning a lot of money to play with a lot of guys who are not earning a lot of money in the future, that's all okay. Like, I just think you can trust in him to be mature, to make mature decisions. And I think he showed the maturity that you'd want to see from a leader more than Nick Nurse has in the last month or so. And I think Nick Nurse was on his best behaviors yesterday. And maybe Fred was on his best behavior and his most candid, his most congenial. Maybe that's all true. But I just think you should feel good about, there's a lot of unknowns, and Fred is one of those unknowns. I don't think you should stress the Fred unknown. That was the biggest thing that I got from yesterday.
Okay. I'm in alignment with how Nick Nurse dealt with yesterday's press conference. I felt like it was a lot of deflecting. I mean, that's not surprising. Even when he's asked about his future and those comments that we talked about last week when before the Sixers game, he kind of doubled or kind of went back on what he said and tried to make it a different narrative. That's less important to me than what Fred said. I'll start with what Fred said, because I really thought that he maybe had the most like candid call out of the systems and the organizational makeup of this team that I had heard from a Raptors player maybe ever. And as you mentioned, he is respectful. He is a guy that isn't petty. He took this opportunity to say something that I think will resonate a lot with Raptors fans when they hear this clip.
He's also honest to a point.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to drag anyone under
the
bus.
This is how I feel.
But this is a real thing. This was a real problem. And I'm not casting blame. I'm not, you know, this isn't to attack someone else. It's to point out something that is true that needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go about it whether I'm here or not. Like that,
exactly.
That's exactly what the Fred experience was yesterday.
So this was the clip to me that meant the most out of yesterday's press conference. It's Fred talking about the identity of the past and how that might need to change for the future.
I think we just got to find another identity. You know what I mean? Whatever that is. And I think that the chaos and the freedom, you know, it worked when it worked. And I think that going forward, just pick what we're going to do. Like, it's not really that complicated. You know what I mean? We lock into how things are going to flow offensively. You know, obviously we got a ton of talent for the breakdown situations. Defensively, I do like the system that we have in place. It needs to be executed at a higher clip. We need more reps and we need sharper. But I think for us, the devil's going to be in the details. And I think that, you know, we have to rep that and build that. Like, we can't try to do it by osmosis and like try to carry over a championship from 4 years ago and expect to add that to a group that we have now. Like, we got to build that every single day, starting as soon as we get back in the gym this summer. Like, you got to start building every single detail.
So a lot of that, like, you could break that into maybe four different comments. The chaos and the structure, interesting, because that's how we watched Raptors basketball this year. Positionless, the 6-9 vision. They went for something and it didn't work. And your leader of your team is saying, we need a different, they have an identity crisis. And that's what Fred brings up quite candidly at the podium. He talks about how you can't just have osmosis from a championship team 4 years ago. Like, your team has changed. Whether the people are the same or not, it's not working.
The same tactics don't apply to this team.
And he calls that out. And that's not just the structure of Nick Nurse. That's also the players needing to perform. But that's also the roster construction.
Yeah, you can hear that
quote.
He
wraps that all up in the organization.
You can
failure.
Hear that quote. And he didn't call out anyone specifically. But he mentioned, like, at every layer that it's not right. What we did, and I think one quote he said, we tried a lot of things. They did try a lot of things.
They had the most starting lineups of any NBA team.
And it didn't work. So something in the system, or everything in the system, is flawed. And he just alluded to that with honesty without saying Masai built a bad team, or Nick's a bad coach, or the guys that we have on this roster aren't good enough. He said all that without saying it, mm-hmm. which is what you want to hear in that situation where it's like, okay, a guy who knows this team probably better than anyone. I think he knows it better than Nurse yeah. because he feels it, unlike Nick Nurse. He feels Raptors basketball as he's a huge part of it, is saying what needs to be said out loud. And I think you should be taking everything Fred says, if you're a Messiah, Nick, whatever, at face value, because it is real. It is the realest thing that we heard yesterday.
And when he brings up the points about it not working and how it was kind of chaotic at times, I thought, yeah, if you're not buying into the identity of your team, we saw that all season long. There was stretches where we thought, is this team buying into what Nick Nurse has to say? Is this team, has Nick Nurse lost the dressing room? There was times of frustration. There was times that us as media even thought that players wanted out. Clearly that makes sense now when your leader of your team is saying that we need a new identity. So how do you find a new identity? You make big changes. And I think that that kind of leads perfectly into this offseason, because mm-hmm. you can't make a new identity by continuing to have the following things: the same coach, the same roster construction. You add one player at the trade deadline and think that everything's changed. You have multiple guys that need contracts this offseason. If you just roll with the same thing, how does your identity change?
And it's important to ask that question, because in some ways what Fred believes needs to happen runs counter to what is at least planned. Like, I don't know what Masai Ujiri is going to do. I don't know if Nick's going to be back. But in terms of like a roster construction standpoint, you sacrificed the end result of next season mm-hmm. by giving away that draft pick to get Jakob Poeltl. You have laid out an expectation to perform at a reasonably high level next year. That means free agents coming back. That means spending. That means doubling down on something that didn't work. Now, you could completely abort that mission at any time, 100%. But Fred has outlined that something needs to change. So now doubling down on it, if there's no change, you have your leader and the someone who knows this team, again, more than anyone, telling you it's not going to work.
And he's definitely a voice of the team. This isn't just Fred VanVleet thinking that this identity didn't work. I feel like that's a lot of players collectively feeling that way. I know it's speculation, but Fred is a leader. He sees the podium as an opportunity to talk about this team in this season. I think it probably resonates with a lot of players that new identity would be a great start to this offseason. That's not a simple thing to change. Even if you get rid of Nick Nurse, you still have a lot of the same players. You still have a lot of the same
habits.
Organization. Different habits need to happen. You're right. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was really well said by Fred. I also thought that we have some comments about Nick Nurse doubling down on that the media created the false narrative that he wanted out.
Yes, talk about disconnect. I mean, I don't think the media and Nick Nurse will ever be on the same page in terms of like who brought this up. I do think it's pretty simple what happened. It was written and reported on that he, you know, was, yeah. you know, connected to Houston, maybe looking to move on, Raptors maybe looking to move on, whatever it was. And I think what happened is he read about that and was a little unhappy about it, mm-hmm. right? I think he just got a little emotional.
He was petty.
He got emotional. He was not like Fred. He was not being the adult in the room in that moment. And he tried to like scale that back, but he was in PR mode. He's in damage control mode. And, you know, and because the mistakes have already been made, there's only so much grace that we can give you. There's only so much equity that's still left mm-hmm. on the table for you to gobble up. I think he handled it as best as he could. I still think he's adversarial with that specifically. Like, he could have just been like, I'm trying to coach a team, unhappy that things are being talked about that are untrue. You could even say untrue, even if it is true. And I wanted to focus on the here and now. Did I get to that point a little haphazardly? Yeah. And I can admit that, but we know Nick, that's Nick. He's not going to say that he was wrong. He always believes, I believe, that he is right. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a Nick Nurse problem. He's a bit stubborn. And that stubborn shows when he's dealing with his own issues. And that stubbornness has shown when he's dealing with the Toronto Raptors team that clearly need to change something and never could.
Yeah, I don't feel like it changed much of my perspective of where everybody else feels about Nick Nurse. I do think that he tried to pour cold water on that he's leaving, and I don't know if that really, if I bought it or not, but...
Do you think he's staying?
There was a part of me that thought, well, he kind of looked like he was trying to save face, and maybe he got a talking to about what happened 2 weeks ago at the podium before the Sixers game, because he definitely tried to hush-hush that yesterday at the media conference, but nonetheless, I felt this way, and I still feel this way, that there has been some level of uncomfortability with the players, and there's tension. This season has been full of tension.
Well, maybe he's picked up, too, that what he tried to do, what he said...
Didn't work.
Did not work.
Yeah,
and exactly. Backfired in a way that he probably didn't imagine. And, like, think about John Gibbons in this city. Like, it didn't end particularly well. Like, he was unceremoniously shown the door in some ways. But he walks on water. He can sell books in this city. He can have successful podcasts in this city. He can do endless
radio
appearances. Mm-hmm. And people want to hear from Gibby. Gibby still has standing in this city. I think I was going Gibby and City.
I like
Gibby.
Gibby
still has standing here. Mm-hmm. He can still be a rock star here. Nick Nurse will always be somewhat of a rock star here. But if you step on every
Arkells.
if you step on every rake on the way out, you lose some of the equity that you've built up in the city that will always treat. I don't care what happens in Houston. You're not going to be the person you were in Houston like you were in Toronto. I don't think, like, this, it's a high, high bar to clear for Nick Nurse to ever be the celebrity, have the same standing, be a household name like he is in this city, anywhere he goes next. And I think he probably realized that some of the Nick Nurse stock tanked after he made those comments.
I'm like kind of done talking about Nick Nurse until something actually changes, because I've like kind of run the course of level of exhaustion of Nick Nurse comments. But there were some other things. You want to talk about Scotty Barnes and like the conditioning development aspect of this.
I think the most interesting like basketball conversation was that, because we asked the question all year long. What's wrong with Scotty Barnes? Why is Scotty Barnes not taking a step forward? Why is Scotty Barnes seemingly having his development stunted? I think our theory was he's being asked to do too much. Mm-hmm. Like, for a young guy who's still learning how to be an NBA player, and you want him to have five jobs. You want him to be a point guard, but also a big, and also a guy who's going to be a great defender.
And also live up to being Rookie of the Year last year.
You want him to be a superstar player, 10-year, 12-year vet, wrapped up in one package in a second-year player. And that was a lot to ask. And I think that probably had an effect on his season. But the role was always part of the issue. And maybe the role, there was one part of it that we didn't pick up on, because the thing that dominated the conversation was this aspect of his conditioning and what he's asked to do on a basketball court being a lot for someone who might be, you know, not the most conditioned athlete on planet Earth. Not someone who works tirelessly to be like a tip-top peaking athlete at all times. And that's not a slight. Like, clearly he has basketball endurance. But I guess in order to be someone who's going to do what he does, which is play defense at a really high level and to be constantly running up and down the court, it maybe needs another step. And it seems like he acknowledged that. It's like he was being asked, perhaps, to run a marathon without marathon training. And maybe this summer is full-on marathon training, so he can be the player that at least the Raptors organization thinks he can be from a work rate standpoint. I did think that was interesting, because we got like the first real acknowledgement of why things may have not gone the way he and the Raptors expected it to go.
I think that also ties into the way that this team's identity and their makeup was wrong, right? Like, you play... You're running your starters to the ground. You're not developing your bench.
Constantly asking too much of individuals.
It's all tied together.
Mm-hmm.
All of the comments on the podium. There was also OG saying that he certainly loves Toronto and would be open to staying here. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of professing love to the city. And I do believe
Nurse
that, I do believe that love is genuine. I do believe the love is genuine. Siakam, same thing.
Freddie,
7 years, it's a part
Freddie
of him.
Too, yeah.
But... these guys are more basketball players than they are Torontonians. And I think if it comes down to it, meaningful basketball will loom larger than affinity to a city.
And one last thing here before we take a break. Fred also saying he's not going to rush making this decision about his opt-out opportunity, whatever's going to happen this postseason, saying that, you know, he's spent his whole NBA heart is here, or his, like, entire love for basketball. I don't know how he worded it specifically, but he, you know, he cares a lot about the city, and he's going to take his time because he's a pro. And he's going to do what's best for him, but not in a way, I don't think, that's going to step on a rake, as he mentioned it.
And but he also said, like, he puts his priorities in place, like, right? He said, the only opinions that matter are the ones that are in my household. So that that family will make its decision, and we'll see how we move on from there.
My whole NBA life is here.
Mm-hmm. And it has been.
All right. We got lots to tee up today. We'll hear more down the road about the Toronto Raptors from the organizational leaders, Masai and Bobby. Not sure when that's going to be, but we got Kipper joining us at 7. Rich Hollenberg from the Tampa Bay Rays studio, Bally Sports Sun, is going to join us at 7:30 because, yeah, the Rays are 13-0 coming in tonight to start their homestand here against the Toronto Blue Jays. We got to figure out, how are you going to beat this team? How do you stand in front of a moving train? Alex Wong is going to join us at 8 o'clock as well. And then we're going to do a Wake and Rake preview of the NBA with Jonathan Von Topel, who's a betting expert, who's going to join us at 8:30 in the Wake and Rake to help us go through some futures and some series looks at the NBA. We'll do that again for the NHL on Monday or Tuesday just to get a full look ahead. But we got all that to look at in today's show. We'll take a break. We'll do the A-list on the other side.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong, bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, a baby A-List for you this morning. By the way, RBC Heritage Open has begun, and my guy who you stole from my cold
hands. Not your guy.
Hands,
what are you my guying?
I have picked Victor Hovland almost every tournament so far. You ripped him from my grasp, and he is now leading. It's early, but he's 7-under.
Second consecutive first round leader cashes, I think, for Victor Hovland. He would have had to dead heat it at the Masters, but
yeah,
I
it was
believe
split three ways, but I still got a little cash.
Yeah, a little cash there. You're from your guy.
Yeah, well, I'm a big Victor Hovland guy. Anyway, my eyes are open on my guys maybe making a little bit of a push today on Friday, but nonetheless, someone that's not there, Rory McIlroy, decided to withdraw from this week's tournament, and it's going to cost him $3 million because of a previous, like, the agreements that they have to play.
Rory wanted this new world,
the Player Impact Program.
Buddy.
$3 million to skip.
What do you think the, did he give a reason? Was he just disappointed?
I believe it was that he needs a little break, but that's pretty rough.
Imagine being at the spot in your life where it's like, man, I need the weekend off. It's going to cost me $3 million, but I'm going to do it.
On the other side of it, Rom, the Masters champion, is playing, and he was asked if he was going to skip, and he goes, it did cross my mind, but I made a commitment earlier in the year, and I want to honor that commitment.
Such a, you know, so laborious, right? Having to play four rounds of golf.
Okay.
Take the private bird over to a new city in the United States and play four rounds of golf after, you know, partying with a green jacket on earlier in the week. Tough life for these PGA Tour professionals.
Rory to live confirmed. Because
imagine that heel turn.
Do you think there'd be a more shocking storyline this year than if Rory decided to go to live? Like, what could shock that for you?
I don't know if anything would be bigger.
I actually don't think anything would be bigger.
I mean, there shocking things can happen. But, well, like, off the top of my head, I don't know. That would be that would be the biggest heel turn you could possibly imagine.
Even
him and Greg Norman just hanging.
Even WWE can write scripts like that.
Oh, that would be the envy of those script writers for sure.
All right. Well, we'll take a look at how this golf tournament shakes out. I need my guys to pick it up a bit. Also, I did book a club fitting.
Oh.
Let me tell you.
I buried the lead there.
I'm late in the game, though, because the next available club fitting is not even in this month of April. Mm. I looked at a couple spots. Everyone else is getting their clubs fitted. Shocking that it's the spring and I dropped the ball.
You getting the front nine or back nine of May?
The front nine of May.
Okay, because you want to...
It's not that bad.
You want to be ready to go June 1.
Oh,
you
I was already looking at tee times this weekend.
But if like this is going to... If it's going to be like middle of summer, it's going to be very disruptive.
No. I mean, I have a set like I'm play with now, but I'm going to be like anxiously anticipating. Like, this club sucks. No wonder I can't do anything. I'm getting new clubs in a month.
I'm a little nervous. You're going to be just piping the ball.
Well, we're going to go weekly and you're going to have to pick it up, Justin.
I have a lot of work to do.
All right, let's take a break because we got Kipper on the other side. He wrote a column in the Toronto Star about Austin Matthews and how this playoff run might impact his future as a Maple Leaf.
Little nugget on Kyle Dubas there, too. We'll talk about both.
Kipper the Insider. That's next.